I ask, suddenly worried that Ridge no longer wants me here. Warren shrugs and begins walking back toward his bedroom.
Exactly what I thought he'd say.
He walks into his room, then comes back out with a cap on and keys in his hand.
He said you two already worked out a deal.
Warren slips a pair of shoes on by the front door.
Heading to work now? That's your room if you want to put your stuff in it. You might have to throw all of Brennan's shit in the corner, though.
He opens the door and steps outside, then turns back around.
Oh, what's your name?
Sydney.
Well, Sydney, welcome to the weirdest place you'll ever live.
He shuts the door behind him. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with this, but what other choice do I have? I pull my phone out from under my pillow. I start to text Ridge because I don't recall closing a deal last night regarding my living arrangements. Before I finish the text, he sends me one first. Ridge, are you okay with this?
Me.
Are you?
Ridge, I asked you first.
Me. I guess. But only if you are.
Ridge. Well then, I guess that means we're roommates.
Me. If we're roommates, can you do me a favor?
Ridge. What's that?
Me. If I ever start dating again, don't be like Tori and sleep with my boyfriend, okay?
Ridge. I can't make any promises.
A few seconds later, he walks out of his bedroom and goes straight to my suitcases. He picks them up and carries them through the other bedroom door. He opens it and nods his head toward the room, indicating that I should come with him. I stand up and follow him into the bedroom. He lays the suitcases on the bed, then pulls his phone out again.
Ridge. Brennan still has a lot of stuff in here. I'll box it up and put it in the corner until he can get it all. Other than that, you might want to change the sheets.
He shoots me a wary look regarding the condition of the sheets, and I laugh. He points to the bathroom.
Ridge, we share the bathroom. Just lock the main door to the hallway and both doors to the bedrooms when you're in there. I obviously won't know when you're in the shower, so unless you want me barging in on you, make sure to lock up.
He walks to the bathroom and flips a light switch on the outside of the door, which turns the lights on and off inside the bathroom, then turns his attention back to the phone.
Ridge, I added switches on the outside because it's an easy way for someone to get my attention since I can't hear a knock. Just flip the switch if you need to come into the bathroom so I'll know. The whole apartment is set up this way. There's a switch outside my bedroom door that turns my lights on and off, if you need me. But I usually have my phone on me, so there's always texting.
He shows me where clean sheets are, and then cleans out what's left in the dresser, while I put the new sheets on the bed. Do I need furniture? Ridge shakes his head.
Ridge. He's leaving it. You can use what's here.
I nod, taking in the bedroom that has unexpectedly just become my new home. I smile at Ridge to let him know I appreciate his help.
Thank you.
He smiles back.
Ridge, I'll be in my room working for the next few hours if you need anything. I have to go to the store this afternoon. You can go with me and get what you need for the apartment.
He backs out of the bedroom and gives me a salute. I sit down on the edge of the bed and salute him back as he shuts the door. I fall back onto the bed and let out a huge sigh of relief. Now that I have a place to live, all I need is a job, and maybe a car since Tori and I mostly shared hers. Then maybe I'll call my parents and tell them I moved. Or maybe not. I'll give this place a couple of weeks in order to see how things turn out.
Ridge. Oh, and BTW? I didn't write that on your forehead.
What? I run to the dresser and look in the mirror for the first time today. Written across my forehead, in black ink, it says, "Someone wrote on your forehead."
Ridge. Me. Morning. How's the thesis coming along? Maggie, do you want me to sugarcoat it, or are you honestly giving me an opening to vent? Me, wide open, vent away. Maggie, I'm miserable, Ridge. I hate it. I work on it for hours every day, and I just want to take a bat to my computer and go all Office Space on it. If this thesis were a child, I'd put it up for adoption and not even think twice about it. If this thesis were a cute, fuzzy puppy, I'd drop it off in the middle of a busy intersection and speed away. Me. And then you would do a U-turn and go back and pick it up and play with it all night. Maggie. I'm serious, Ridge. I think I'm losing my mind. Me. Well, you already know what I think. Maggie. Yes, I know what you think. Let's not get into that right now. Me. You're the one who wanted to vent. You don't need this kind of stress. Maggie. Stop. Me. I can't, Maggie. You know how I feel, and I'm not keeping my opinion to myself when we both know I'm right. Maggie. This is exactly why I never whined to you about it, because it always comes back to the same thing. I asked you to stop. Please, Ridge, stop. Me. Okay. Me. I'm sorry. Me. Now is when you return a text that says, it's okay, Ridge, I love you. Me. Hello? Me. Don't do this, Maggie. Maggie. Give a girl a minute to pee. Dang, I'm not mad. I just don't want to talk about it anymore. How are you? Me. Phew. Good. We got a new roommate. Maggie. I thought she wasn't moving in until next month. Me. No, it's not Bridget's sister. It's Sydney. The one I was telling you about a few days ago. After I decided to break the news to her about her boyfriend, it left her with nowhere to go. Warren and I are letting her stay here until she finds her own place. You'll like her. Maggie. So I guess she believed you about her boyfriend? Me. Yeah, she was pretty pissed at first that I didn't tell her sooner, but she's had a few days to let it sink in, so I think she gets it. So what time will you be here Friday? Maggie. Not sure. I would say it depends on whether I get enough work done on my thesis, but I'm not mentioning my thesis to you ever again. I guess I'll get there when I get there. Me. Well, then I guess I'll see you when I see you. Love you. Let me know when you're on your way. Maggie. Love you too. And I know you're just concerned. I don't expect you to agree with my decisions, but I do want you to understand them. Me. I do understand, babe. I do. I love you. Maggie. Love you too. I drop my head forcefully against the headboard and rub my palms up and down my face out of sheer frustration. Of course I understand her decision, but I'll never feel good about it. She's so frustratingly determined, I seriously don't see how I'll ever get through to her. I stand up and put my phone into my back pocket, then walk to my bedroom door. When I swing it open, I'm met with a smell that I'm positive is exactly what heaven will smell like. Bacon. Warren looks up at me from the dining room table and grins, pointing to his plateful of food. She's a keeper, he signs. The eggs suck, though. I'm only eating them because I don't want to complain or she might never cook for us again. Everything else is great. He signs everything he's saying without verbalizing it. Warren usually verbalizes all of his signed communication out of respect for others around us. When he doesn't verbalize, I know he wants our conversation to remain between the two of us. Like the silent one we're having right now while Sydney's in the kitchen. And she even asked how we liked our coffee, he signs. I glance into the kitchen. Sydney smiles, so I smile back. I'm shocked to see her in a good mood today. After we got back from our trip to the store a few days ago, she's been spending most of the time in her room. At one point yesterday, Warren went in to ask her if she wanted any dinner, and he said she was on her bed crying. So he backed out and left her alone. I've wanted to check on her, but there isn't really anything I can do to make her feel better. All she can do is give it time, so I'm glad she's at least out of bed today. And don't look right now, Ridge, but did you see what she's wearing? Did you see that dress? He bites the knuckles on his fist and winces, as if simply looking at her is causing him actual physical pain. I shake my head and take a seat across from him. I'll look later. He grins. I'm so glad her boyfriend cheated on her. Otherwise, I'd be eating leftover toothpaste-filled Oreos for breakfast. I laugh. At least you wouldn't have to brush your teeth. This was the best decision we've ever made, he says. Maybe later we can talk her into vacuuming in that dress while we sit on the couch and watch. Warren laughs at his own comment, but I don't crack a smile. I don't think he realizes he signed and spoke that last sentence. Before I can tell him, a biscuit comes hurtling past my head and smacks him in the face. He jumps back in shock and looks at Sydney. She's walking to the table with a "don't mess with me" look on her face. She hands me a plate of food, then sets her own plate down in front of her and takes a seat. I said that out loud, didn't I? Warren asks. I nod. He looks at Sydney, and she's still glaring at him. At least I was complimenting you, he says with a shrug. She laughs and nods once, as if he just made a good point. She picks up her phone and begins to text. She glances at me briefly, giving her head a slight shake when my phone vibrates in my pocket. She texted me something, but apparently doesn't want me to make it obvious. I casually slide my hand into my pocket and pull my phone out, then read her text under the table. Sydney, don't eat the eggs. I look at her and arch an eyebrow, wondering what the hell is wrong with the eggs. She casually sends another text while she holds a conversation with Warren. Sydney, I poured dish soap and baby powder in them. It'll teach him not to write on my forehead again. Me, what the hell? When are you going to tell him? Sydney, I'm not. Warren, what are you and Sydney texting about? I look up to see Warren holding his phone, staring at me. He picks up his fork and takes another bite of the eggs, and the sight makes me laugh. He lunges across the table and grabs my phone out of my hands, then begins scrolling through the texts. I try to grab it back from him, but he pulls his arm out of my reach. He pauses for a few seconds as he reads, then immediately spits his mouthful back onto his plate. He tosses me back my phone and reaches for his glass. He calmly takes a drink, sets it back down on the table, then pushes his chair back and stands up. He points to Sydney. You just messed up, little girl, he says. This means war. Sydney is smirking at him with a challenging gleam in her eye. Once Warren walks back to his bedroom and shuts his door, she loses the confident smirk and turns to me wide-eyed. Sydney. Help me, I need ideas. I suck at pranks. Me. Yeah, you do. Dish soap and baby powder? You need serious help. Good thing you have the master on your side. She grins, then begins eating her breakfast. I don't even get my first bite down before Bridget walks out of her room, sans smile. She walks straight to the kitchen and proceeds to make herself a plate of food. Warren returns from his room and sits back down at the table. I walked away for dramatic effect, he says. I wasn't finished eating yet. Bridget sits, takes a bite of bacon, then looks over at Sydney.
Did you make this?
She says, pointing at the food dramatically. I cock my head because she's talking to Sydney the same way she talks to me, as if she's deaf. I look over at Sydney, who nods a response to Bridget. I look back at Bridget, and she says,
Thank you.
She takes a bite of the eggs. And she spits them right back out onto her plate. She coughs and rushes to take a drink, then pushes away from the table. She looks back at Sydney.
I can't eat this shit.
She walks back to the kitchen, drops her food in the trash, and heads back to her bedroom. The three of us break out into laughter after her door closes. When the laughter subsides, I turn to Warren. Why does Bridget think Sydney is deaf? Warren laughs. We don't know, he says, but we don't feel like correcting her just yet. I laugh on the outside, but inside I'm a little confused. I don't know when Warren began referring to himself and Sydney as we, but I'm not sure I like it. My bedroom light flicks on and off, so I close my laptop and walk to the door. I open it, and Sydney is standing in the hallway, holding her laptop. She hands me a piece of paper. I already finished my homework for the rest of the week. I even cleaned the entire apartment, excluding Bridget's room, of course. Warren won't let me watch TV because it's not my night, whatever that means. So I was hoping I could hang out with you for a little while. I have to keep my mind busy or I'll start thinking about Hunter again, and then I'll start feeling sorry for myself. And then I'll want Pine Sol, and I really don't want to have any Pine Sol because I don't want to become a raging alcoholic like you. I smile, step aside, and motion her into my bedroom. She looks around. The only place to sit is my bed, so I point to it, then take a seat and pull my laptop onto my lap. She sits on the other side of the bed and does the same. "Thanks," she says with a smile. She opens her laptop and drops her eyes to the screen. I tried not to take Warren's advice this morning about admiring the dress she had on today, but it was hard not to look, especially when he so blatantly pointed it out. I'm not sure what kind of weird thing he and Bridget have going on, but it rubs me the wrong way that he and Sydney seem to have hit it off so well. And it really rubs me the wrong way that it rubs me the wrong way. I don't look at her like that, so I don't understand why I'm sitting here thinking about it. And if she were standing next to Maggie, there wouldn't be a doubt in my mind that Maggie is more physically my type. Maggie is petite, with dark eyes and straight black hair. Sydney is the complete opposite. She's taller than Maggie, pretty average height, but her body's a lot more defined and curvy than Maggie's. Sydney definitely fills out the dress well, which is why Warren liked it. At least she changed into shorts before showing up at my bedroom door. That helps a little. The tops she wears are usually way too big for her, and they hang off her shoulders, which makes me think she took a lot of Hunter's t-shirts with her when she packed her bags. Maggie's hair is always straight, whereas Sydney's is hard to figure out. It seems to change with the weather, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. The first time I saw her sitting on her balcony, I thought she had brown hair, but it turns out her hair was just wet. After playing guitar for about an hour that night, I looked at her as she was walking back inside her apartment, and her hair had dried completely and was in piles of blonde waves that fell past her shoulders. Today it's curly and pulled up into a messy knot on top of her head. Sydney, stop staring at me. Shit. I laugh and attempt to brush away whatever the hell that internal detour was I just took. Me, you look sad. The first night she showed up here, she seemed happier than she does right now. Maybe it just took time for reality to sink in. Sydney, is there a way we can chat on the computer? It's a lot easier for me than texting. Me, sure, what's your last name? I'll friend you on Facebook. Sydney, Blake. I open my laptop and search her name. When I find her profile, I send her a friend request. She accepts it almost instantly and shoots me a message. Sydney, hello, Ridge Lawson. Me. Hello, Sydney Blake. Better? She nods. Sydney. You're a computer programmer? Me. Already stalking my profile? And yes, I work from home. Graduated 2 years ago with a degree in computer engineering. Sydney. How old are you? Me. 24. Sydney. Please tell me 24 is a lot better than 22. Me. 22 will be good for you. Maybe not this week or next week, but it'll get better. She sighs and puts one of her hands up to the back of her neck and rubs it, then begins typing again. Sydney, I miss him. Is that crazy? I miss Tori, too. I still hate them and want to see them suffer, but I miss what I had with him. It's really starting to hurt. When it first happened, I thought maybe I was better off without him, but now I just feel lost. I don't want to be harsh in my response, but at the same time, I'm not a girl, so I'm not about to tell her what she's feeling is normal. Because to me, it's not normal. Me. You only miss the idea of him. You weren't happy with him even before you found out he was cheating. You were only with him because it was comfortable. You just miss the relationship, but you don't miss Hunter. She looks up at me and cocks her head, narrowing her eyes in my direction for a few seconds before dropping them back to the computer. Sydney, how can you say I wasn't happy with him? I was, until I found out what he was doing. I honestly thought he was the one. Me, no, you didn't. You wanted him to be, but that's not how you really felt. Sydney, You're kind of being a jerk right now, you know that? I set my laptop beside me and walk to my desk. I pick up my notebook and a pen and go back to the bed and take a seat next to her. I flip open my notebook to the first set of lyrics she sent me. "Read these," I write at the top of the page. I set the notebook in her lap. She looks down at the lyrics, then takes the pen. "I don't need to read them," she writes. "I wrote them." I scoot closer to her and put the notebook in my lap, then circle a few lines of her chorus. I point to them again. "Read these as if you weren't the one who wrote them." She reluctantly looks down at the notebook and reads the chorus. "You don't know me like you think you do. I pour me one when I really want to. Oh, you're living a lie, living a lie. You think we're good, but we're really not. You could have fixed things, but you missed your shot. You're living a lie, living a lie." When I'm certain she's had time to read them, I pick up the pen and write, "These words came from somewhere inside you, Sydney. You can tell yourself you were better off with him, but read the lyrics you wrote. Go back to what you were feeling when you wrote them." I circle several lines, then read her words along with her. "With a right turn, the tires start to burn. I see your smile. It's been hiding for a while, for a while. Your foot pushes down against the ground. The world starts to blur. Can't remember who you were, who you were." I look at her, and she's still staring at the paper. A single tear trickles down her cheek, and she quickly wipes it away. She picks up the pen and begins writing. "They're just words, Ridge." I reply, "They're your words, Sydney. Words that came from you. You say you feel lost without him, but you felt lost even when you were with him. Read the rest." She inhales a deep breath, then looks down at the paper again. I yell, "Slow down. We're almost out of town. The road gets rough. Have you had enough? Enough?" You look at me, start heading for a tree. I open up the door, can't take any more. Any more. Then I say, "You don't know me like you think you do. I pour me one when I really want to. Oh, you're living a lie, living a lie. You think we're good, but we're really not. You could have fixed things, but you missed your shot. You're living a lie, living a lie."
Chapter 6. Sydney. I continue to stare at the words in the notebook. Is he right? Did I write them because that's how I really feel? I never give it much thought when I write lyrics, because I've always felt no one would read them, so it doesn't matter what the meaning is behind the words. But now that I think about it, maybe the fact that I don't give them much thought proves that they really are a reflection of how I feel. To me, lyrics are harder to write when you have to invent the feelings behind them. That's when lyrics take a lot of thought, when they aren't genuine. Oh, wow. Rich is absolutely right. I wrote these lyrics weeks ago, long before I knew about Hunter and Tori. I lean back against the headboard and open my laptop again. Me. Okay, you win. Ridge, it's not a competition. Just trying to help you see that maybe this breakup is exactly what you needed. I don't know you very well, but based on the lyrics you wrote, I'm guessing you've been craving the chance to be on your own for a while now. Me. Well, you claim not to know me very well, but you seem to know me better than I know myself. Ridge. I only know what you told me in those lyrics. Speaking of which, you feel like running through them? I was about to compile them with the music to send to Brennan, and could use your ears. Pun intended. I laugh and elbow him. Me. Sure, what do I do? He stands and picks up his guitar, then nods his head toward the balcony. I don't want to go out on that balcony. I don't care if I was ready to leave Hunter. I sure wasn't ready to leave Tori. And being out there will be too much of a distraction. I crinkle my nose and shake my head. He glances across the courtyard at my apartment, then pulls his lips into a tight, thin line and slowly nods his head in understanding. He walks over to the bed and sits on the mattress next to me. Ridge, I want you to sing the lyrics while I play. I'll watch you so I can make sure we're on the same page with where they need to be placed on the sheet music. Me. No, I'm not singing in front of you. He huffs and rolls his eyes. Ridge, are you afraid I'll laugh at how awful you sound? I can't hear you, Sydney. He's smiling his irritating smile at me. Me. Shut up. Fine. He sets the phone down and begins playing the song. When the lyrics are supposed to come in, he looks up, and I freeze. Not because I'm nervous, though. I freeze because I'm doing that thing again, where I'm holding my breath because seeing him play is just... he's incredible. He doesn't miss a beat when I skip my intro. He just starts over from the beginning and plays the opening again. I shake myself out of my pathetic awe and begin singing the words. I would probably never be singing lyrics in front of anyone one-on-one like this, but it helps that he can't hear me. He does stare pretty hard, though, which is a little unnerving. He pauses after every stanza and makes notes on a page. I lean over and look at what he's writing. He's putting musical notes on blank sheet music paper, along with the lyrics. He points to one of the lines, then grabs his phone. Ridge, what key do you sing this line in? Me. B. Ridge, do you think it would sound better if you took it a little higher? Me. I don't know, I guess we could try. He plays the second part of the song again, and I take his advice and sing in a higher key. Surprisingly, he's right. It does sound better. How did you know that? I ask. He shrugs. Ridge, I just do. Me, but how? If you can't hear, how do you know what sounds good and what doesn't? Ridge, I don't need to hear it. I feel it. I shake my head, not understanding. I can maybe understand how he's taught himself to play a guitar. With enough practice and a good teacher and maybe a ton of studying, it's possible for him to play as he does. But that doesn't explain how he can know which key a voice should be in, and especially which key sounds better. Ridge, what's wrong? You look confused. Me, I am confused. I don't understand how you can differentiate between vibrations or however you say you feel it. I'm beginning to think you and Warren are trying to pull off the ultimate prank, and you're only pretending to be deaf. Ridge laughs, then scoots back on the bed until his back meets the headboard. He sits up straight and holds his guitar to his side. He spreads his legs, then pats the empty spot between them. What the hell? I hope my eyes aren't open as wide as I think they are. There is no way I'm sitting that close to him. I shake my head. He rolls his eyes and picks up his phone. Ridge, come here. I want to show you how I feel it. Get over yourself and stop thinking I'm trying to seduce you. I hesitate a few more seconds, but the agitation on his face makes me think I'm being a little immature. I crawl forward, then turn around and carefully sit in front of him, with my back to his chest, but with several inches between us. He pulls the guitar in front of me and wraps his other arm around me until he's holding it in position. He pulls it closer, which pushes me flush against him. Ridge reaches down to his side and picks up his phone. Ridge, I'm gonna play a chord, and I want you to tell me where you feel it. I nod, and he brings his hand back to the guitar. He plays a chord and repeats it a few times, then pauses. I grab my phone. Me, I felt it in your guitar. He shakes his head and picks up his phone again. Ridge, I know you felt it in the guitar, dummy, but where in your body did you feel it? Me,
Play it again. I close my eyes this time and try to take this seriously. I've asked him how he feels it, and he's trying to show me, so the least I can do is try to understand. He plays the chord a few times, and I'm really trying hard to concentrate. But I feel the vibration everywhere, especially in the guitar pressed against my chest. Me. It's hard for me, Ridge. It just feels like it's everywhere. He pushes me forward, and I scoot up. He sets the guitar down, stands up, and walks out of the bedroom. I wait for him, curious about what he's doing. When he comes back, he's holding something in his fist. He holds his fist out, so I hold up my palm. Earplugs. He slides in behind me, and I scoot back against his chest again, then put the earplugs in. I close my eyes and lean my head back against his shoulder. He wraps his arms around me and picks up his guitar, pulling it against my chest. I can feel his head rest lightly against mine, and the intimate way we're seated suddenly registers. I've never sat like this with someone I wasn't seriously dating. It's odd, because it seems so natural with him. Not at all as if he's got anything other than music on his mind. I like that about him, because if I were pressed up against Warren like this, I'm positive his hands wouldn't be on the guitar. I can feel his arms moving slightly, so I know he's playing, even though I can't hear it. I concentrate on the vibration and focus all my attention on the movement inside my chest. When I'm able to pinpoint exactly where I feel it, I bring my hand to my chest and pat it. I can feel him nod his head, and then he continues playing. I can still feel it in my chest, but it's so much lower this time. I move my hand down and he nods again. I pull away from him and turn around to face him. Wow. He lifts his shoulders and smiles shyly. It's adorable. Me. This is crazy. I still don't understand how you can play an instrument like this, but I know how you feel it now. He shrugs off my compliment, and I love how modest he is, because he clearly has more talent than anyone I've ever met. Wow, I say again, shaking my head. Ridge, stop. I don't like compliments, it's awkward. I set down my phone, and we both move back to the laptops. Me. Well, you shouldn't be so impressive then. I don't think you realize what an incredible gift you have, Ridge. I know you say you work hard at it, but so do thousands of people who can hear, and they can't put together songs like you can. I mean, I can maybe understand the whole guitar thing now that you've explained it, but what about the voices? How in the heck can you know what a voice sounds like and what key it needs to be in? Ridge, actually, I can't differentiate the sounds of a voice. I've never felt a person sing the way I listen to a guitar. I can place vocals to a song and develop melodies because I've studied a lot of songs and have learned which keys match up to which notes based on the written form of music. It doesn't just come naturally. I work hard at this. I love the idea of music, and even though I can't hear it, I've learned to understand and appreciate it in a different way. I've had to work harder at the melodies. There are times I'll write a song and Brennan will tell me we can't use it because it either sounds too much like an existing song, or it doesn't actually sound good to hearing ears like I assumed it would. He can downplay this all he wants, but I'm convinced I'm sitting next to a musical genius. I hate that he thinks his ability comes from working so hard at it. I mean, I'm sure it helps, because all talents have to be nurtured in order to excel, even for the gifted. But his talent is mind-blowing. It makes me hurt for him, knowing what he could do with his gift if he could hear. Me. Can you hear anything? At all? He shakes his head. Ridge. I've worn hearing aids before, but they were more inconvenient than helpful. I have profound hearing loss, so they didn't help at all when it came to hearing voices or my guitar. When I used them, I could tell there were noises, but I couldn't decipher them. In all honesty, hearing aids were a constant reminder that I couldn't hear. Without them, I don't even think about it. Me, what made you want to learn guitar, knowing you would never be able to hear it? Ridge, Brennan, he wanted to learn when we were kids, so we learned together. Me, the guy who used to live here? How long have you known him? Ridge, 21 years. He's my little brother. Me, is he in your band? Ridge glances at me in confusion. Ridge, have I not told you about our band? I shake my head. Ridge, he's the singer. He also plays guitar. Me, when do you play next? I want to watch. He laughs. Ridge, I don't play. It's kind of complicated. Brennan insists that I have as much stake in the ownership of the band as he does, because I write the majority of the music, which is why I refer to myself as being part of the band sometimes. I think it's ridiculous, but he's convinced we wouldn't be where we are at this point without me, so I agree to it for now. But with the success I think he's about to have, I'll make him renegotiate eventually. I don't like feeling as though I'm taking advantage of him. Me. If he doesn't feel that way, then you definitely shouldn't feel that way. And why don't you play with them? Ridge. I have a few times. It's kind of difficult not being able to hear everything else going on with the band during a song, so I feel like I throw them off when I play with them. Besides, they're on tour right now and I can't travel, so I've just been sending him the stuff I write. Me. Why can't you tour with them? Don't you work from home? Ridge. Other obligations. But next time they're in Austin, I'll take you. I'll take you. I think I like that part of his message a little too much. Me. What's the name of the band? Ridge. Sounds of Cedar. I slam my laptop shut and swing my eyes to his. Shut up! He nods, then reaches down and opens my laptop again. Ridge, you've heard of us? Me, yes. Everyone on campus has heard of your band, considering they played almost every single weekend last year. Hunter loves you guys. Ridge, ah, well, this is the first time I've ever wished we had one less fan. So you've seen Brennan play? Me, I only went with Hunter once and it was one of the last shows, but yes, I think I may have most of the songs on my phone, actually. Ridge. Wow, small world. We're close to a record deal. That's why I've been stressing so much about these songs. And why you need to help me. Me. OMG. I just realized I'm writing lyrics for Sounds of Cedar. I slide my laptop over, then roll onto my stomach and squeal into the mattress while I kick my legs up and down. Holy crap, this is too cool. I compose myself, ignoring Ridge's laughter, then sit up straight again and grab my laptop. Me. So you wrote most of those songs? He nods. Me. Did you write the lyrics to the song Something? He nods again. I seriously can't believe this is happening right now. Knowing he wrote those lyrics and now I'm sitting here next to him is exciting me way too much. Me. I'm about to listen to your song. Since you get to decipher my lyrics, it's my turn to decipher yours. Ridge. I wrote that song 2 years ago. Me. Still, it came from you. From somewhere inside you, Ridge. Winky face. He picks up a pillow and throws it at my head. I laugh and scroll through the music folder on my phone until I find the song. And I hit play. Something. I keep on wondering why I can't say bye to you. And the only thing I can think of is the truth. It's hard to start over. Keep checking that rear view too. But something's coming, something right for you. Just wait a bit longer.
You'll find something you wanted, something you needed, something you want to have repeated. Oh, that feeling's all right. You'll find that if you listen, between all the kissing. What made it work, wound up missing. Oh, that seems about right. I guess I thought that we would always stay the same, and I can tell that you find somebody to blame. And I know in my heart, in my mind, it's all a game. Our hopes and wishes won't relight the flame. Just wait a bit longer. You'll find something you wanted, something you needed, something you want to have repeated. Oh, that feeling's all right. You'll find that if you listen, between all the kissing. What made it work wound up missing. Oh, that seems about right. You don't ever have to wonder, 'cause you will always know that what we had was for sure, for sure. Now that thing is no more, no more. You'll find what you wanted. You'll find what you needed. You'll find what you wanted. You'll find what you needed. You'll find what you needed. When the song ends, I sit back up on the bed. I would ask him about the lyrics and the meaning behind them right now, but I'm not sure I want to. I want to listen to it again without him watching me, because it's really hard to concentrate when he's staring at me. He's resting his chin in his hands, casually watching me. I try to hide my grin, but it's hard. I see a smile spread across his lips before he looks down at his phone. Ridge, why do I feel like you're fangirling right now? Probably because I am. Me, I'm not fangirling. Don't flatter yourself. I've witnessed how evil you can be with your revenge schemes, and I've been exposed to your severe alcoholism, so I'm not as enamored with you as I could be. Ridge, my father was a severe alcoholic. Your jokes are a little off-putting. I look up at him, apologetically, and with a hint of embarrassment. I'm sorry, I was kidding. Ridge, I'm kidding too. I kick him in the knee and glare at him. Ridge, well, sort of kidding. My father really is a raging alcoholic, but I don't give a shit if you joke about it. Me, I can't now, you've ruined the fun. He laughs, and it's followed by an awkward moment of silence. I grin and drop my eyes back to my phone. Me, OMG, can I have your autograph? He rolls his eyes. Me, please? And can I have my picture taken with you? OMG, I'm in Ridge Lawson's bed. I'm laughing, but Ridge isn't finding me amusing. Me, Ridge Lawson, will you sign my boobs? He puts his laptop down beside him, leans over to his nightstand, and picks up a marker, then turns back to me. I don't really want his autograph. Surely he knows I'm kidding. He pulls the lid off the marker, swiftly lunges across the bed, and knocks me onto my back, bringing the marker to my forehead. He's trying to sign my face? I lift my legs and create a barrier with my knees as I try to force his hands away. Damn it, he's strong. He puts one of my hands under his knee and locks my arm to the bed. His other arm grabs my arm that's pushing his face away, and he pushes that hand to the bed too. I'm screaming and laughing and trying to turn my face away from him, but every time I move, the marker moves over my face while he tries to sign his name. I'm unable to overpower him, so I eventually sigh and hold my head still so he'll stop drawing all over my face. He hops up, puts the lid back on the marker, and smirks at me. I reach over to my laptop. Me. You are no longer my prank master. This has officially turned into a three-way war. Excuse me while I go Google my revenge. I fold up my laptop and walk quietly out of the room while he laughs at me. As I head through the living room toward my bedroom, Warren glances at me. Twice.
Should have stayed in here and watched porn with me,
he says, taking in the marker all over my face. I ignore his comment. Ridge and I just finished discussing TV rules. I lie. I get Thursdays.
No, you don't, Warren says. Tomorrow is Thursday. I watch Thursday night porn on Thursday.
Not anymore, you don't. Guess you should have asked about my television habits when you were interviewing me. He groans.
Fine. You can have Thursdays, but only if you wear that dress you had on earlier.
I laugh. I'm burning that dress.
Ridge. Why'd you give Sydney the TV tonight? Warren signs. He drops onto the couch next to me. You know I love Thursday night. I'm off work on Fridays. I never talked to Sydney about TV nights. He glances towards Sydney's bedroom door with a scowl on his face. What a little liar. How did you meet her anyway? Music related. She's writing lyrics for the band. Warren's eyes bulge, and he straightens up on the couch, turning to look at me as if I've just betrayed him. Don't you think this is something your manager should know about? I laugh and sign back to him. Good point. Hey, Warren, Sydney is officially writing lyrics for us. He frowns. And don't you think your manager should have discussed a financial arrangement with her? What percentage are we giving her? We're not. She feels guilty taking a percentage while she's not paying rent, so we're good for now. He's standing now, glaring down at me. How do you know you can trust her? And what if something happens with a song she helped write? What if it makes the cut on the album and she suddenly decides she wants a percentage? And why the hell aren't you writing the lyrics anymore? I sigh. We've been over this so many times, it's making my head hurt. I can't. You know I can't. It's just for a little while until I get over my block. And calm down, she's agreed to sign over anything she helps with. He drops back onto the couch, frustrated. Just don't add any more people to our band without consulting me first, okay? I feel like I'm being shut out when you don't include me. He folds his arms across his chest and pouts.
Is sweet little Warren pouting?
I lean forward and wrap my arms around him, and he tries to shove me off. I climb on top of him and kiss his cheek, and he starts hitting me in the arm, trying to pull away from my grasp. I laugh and let go of his face, then look up at Sydney, who just walked into the room. She's staring at us. Warren slides his hand up my thigh and lays his head on my shoulder. I reach up and pat his cheek while we both stare up at her straight-faced. She shakes her head slowly and walks back into her bedroom. As soon as her bedroom door closes, we separate. I wish I hated Bridget a little more than I do at night, because Sydney definitely needs me, Warren sighs. I laugh, knowing Sydney is more than likely swearing off guys based on the week she's had. That girl doesn't need anything other than the opportunity to be alone for a while. Warren shakes his head. No, that girl definitely needs me. I wonder how I can pull off an elaborate prank that involves her agreeing to have sex with me. Bridget, I remind him. I don't know why I remind him. I never remind him about Bridget when he talks about other girls. You're a dream crusher, he signs, falling back against the couch at the same moment I receive a text. Sydney, can I ask you a question? Me, as long as you promise never again to start a question off with whether or not you can propose a question. Sydney, okay, asshole. I know I shouldn't be thinking about him at all, but I'm curious. What did he write on that paper when we went to get my purse, and what did you write back that made him hit you? Me. I agree that you shouldn't be thinking about him at all, but I'm honestly shocked it's taken you this long to ask me about it. Sydney. Well? I hate writing it verbatim, but she wants to know, so. Me. He wrote, "Are you fucking her?" Sydney. Oh my God, what a prick. Me. Yep. Sydney. So what did you say back to him that made him punch you? Me. I wrote, "Why do you think I'm here for her purse? I gave her 100 for tonight and now she owes me change." I reread the text and I'm not so sure it sounds as funny as I thought it did. My eyes dart up to her bedroom door, which is now swinging open. She runs into the living room, directly toward the couch. I don't know if it's the look on her face or the hands that are coming at me, but I immediately cover my head and duck behind Warren. He doesn't really like being used as a human shield, though, so he jumps off the couch. She continues slapping at my arms until I'm curled up in a fetal position on the couch. I'm trying not to laugh, but she hits like a girl. This is nothing compared to what I saw her do to Tori. She backs away, and I reluctantly uncover my head. She marches back to her room, and I watch as she slams her door. Warren is now standing next to the couch with his hands on his hips. He looks at me, then looks back at Sydney's door. He puts his palms up and shakes his head, then retreats into his bedroom. I should probably apologize to her. It was just a joke, but I guess I can see how it would piss her off. I knock on her door a couple of times. She doesn't open it, so I text her. Me. Can I come in? Sydney. That depends. Do you have any bills smaller than 100 this time? Me. It seemed funny at the time. I'm sorry. A few seconds pass, and then her door opens and she steps aside. I raise my eyebrows and smile, attempting to look innocent. She shoots me a dirty look and walks back to her bed. Sydney. It wasn't what I would have wanted you to say, but I can see why you said it. He's a jerk, and I probably would have wanted to piss him off in that moment, too. Me. He is a jerk, but I probably should have responded differently. I'm sorry. Sydney. Yes, you should have. Maybe instead of insinuating that I was a whore, you could have gone with, if I could only be so lucky. I laugh at her comment and offer up another alternative answer. Me. I could have gone with, only when you're being faithful to her, which is never. Sydney. Or you could have said, no, I'm not. I'm madly in love with Warren. At least she's making jokes about it. I really do feel sort of bad for saying that to him, but it felt oddly appropriate at the time. Me. We didn't really get any work done last night. Are you in the mood to make beautiful music together?
Chapter 7. Sydney. Ridge puts down his guitar for the first time in more than an hour. We haven't texted at all, because we've been on a roll. It's pretty cool how well we seem to work together. He plays a song over and over, while I lie across his bed with a notebook in front of me. I write down the lyrics as they come to me, most of the time crumpling up the paper, chucking it across the room and starting over. But I've finished lyrics for almost an entire song tonight, and he's only crossed out two lines he didn't like. I'd say that's progress. There's something about these moments when we're writing music that I absolutely love. All my worries and thoughts about everything wrong in my life seem to go away for the short times we write together. It's nice. Ridge. Let's do the whole song now. Sit up so I can watch you sing it. I want to make sure we have it perfect before I send it to Brennan. He starts playing the song, so I begin singing. He's watching me closely, and the way his eyes seem to read my every movement makes me uneasy. Maybe it's because he can't express words through speaking, but everything else about him seems to make up for that. As easy as he is to read, it's only that way when he wants to be read. Most of the time, he's able to hold back his expressions, and I don't know what the hell he's thinking. He holds the crown in the nonverbal department. I'm pretty sure that with the looks he gives, if he could speak, he'd never even have to. I feel uncomfortable watching him watch me sing, so I close my eyes and try to recall the lyrics as he continues to play the song. It's awkward singing them with him only a few feet away. When I wrote the lyrics the first time, he was playing his guitar but was a good 200 yards away on his balcony. Still, though, as much as I tried to pretend I was writing them about Hunter at the time, I knew I was imagining Ridge singing them all along. A little bit more. Why don't you let me take you away? We can live like you wanted, from place to place. I'll be your home. We can make our own. 'Cause together makes it pretty hard to be alone. We can have everything we ever wanted, and just a little bit more. Just a little bit more. His guitar stops, so naturally I stop. I open my eyes, and he's watching me with one of his expressionless expressions. I take that back. This expression isn't expressionless at all. He's thinking. I can tell by the squint in his eyes that he's coming up with an idea. He glances away in order to pick up his phone. Ridge, do you mind if I try something? Me, as long as you promise never again to propose a question by asking if I mind if you can try something. Ridge, nice try, but that made no sense. I laugh, then look up at him. I nod softly, scared of what he's about to try. He sits up on his knees and leans forward, placing both hands on my shoulders. I attempt to hold in my gasp, but it's a failed attempt. I don't know what he's doing or why he's getting so close to me, but holy crap. Holy crap. Why is my heart spazzing out right now? He pushes me until I'm flat on his mattress. He reaches behind him and picks up his guitar, then lays it on the other side of me. He lies down next to me. Calm down, heart, please. Ridge has supersonic senses, and he'll feel you beating through the vibrations of the mattress. Ridge scoots closer to me, and by the way he's hesitating, it makes me think he's unsure if I'll allow him any closer. I will. I absolutely will. He's staring at me now, contemplating his next move. I can tell he's not about to make a pass at me. Whatever he's about to do is making him way more apprehensive than if he were just planning to kiss me. He's eyeing my neck and chest as if he's searching for a particular part of me. His eyes stop on my abdomen, pause, then fall back to his phone. Oh, Lord. What is he about to do? Put his hands on me? Does he want to feel me sing this song? Feeling requires touching, and touching requires hands. His hands. Feeling me. Ridge, do you trust me? Me. I don't trust anyone anymore. My trust has been completely depleted this week. Ridge, can you replenish your trust for about 5 minutes? I want to feel your voice. I inhale, then look at him, lying next to me, and I nod. He sets down his phone without breaking my gaze. He's watching me as if he's warning me to stay calm, but it's having the exact opposite effect. I'm sort of panicked right now. He scoots closer and slides his arm under the back of my neck. Oh, now he's even closer. Now his face is hovering over mine. He reaches across my body and pulls the guitar flush against my side, bringing it closer to us. He's still eyeing me with a look that seems intended to produce a calming effect. It doesn't. It doesn't calm me down at all. He lowers his head to my chest, then presses his cheek against my shirt. Oh, this is great. Now he definitely feels how spastic my heart is beating right now. I close my eyes and want to die of embarrassment, but I don't have time for that, because he begins strumming the strings of the guitar next to me. I realize he's playing with both hands, one from underneath my head, and one over me. His head is against my chest, and I can feel his hair brush my neck. He's pretty much sprawled across me in order to reach his guitar with both arms. Oh, my dear sweet baby Jesus in a wicker basket. How does he expect me to sing? I try to calm down by regulating my breathing, but it's hard when we're positioned like this. As usual, when I miss an intro, he seamlessly starts the song over again from the beginning. When he reaches the point where I come in, I begin singing. Sort of. It's really quiet, because I'm still waiting for air to find its way back into my lungs. After the first few lines, I find a steadiness to my voice.